There we are. My name's Sam. I'm an addict. Thanks, James, for taking the meeting. Doing a wonderful job. And thanks, Des, for asking me. I'll be honest, not quite how I'd pictured doing my first chair at Trafalgar, right? When, like, 4 years ago, sat in the meeting, seeing the big room, like, it was, you know, hundreds of people, I'm doing the 40, everyone's there to see me, you know, the whole thing, right? The whole ego thing. Naturally, I've had that thought a couple of times today and just thought how perfect this is as a sort of ego leveler for me. And so that's it's really nice to be here and a privilege to be able to share. It's as well, I feel inordinately lucky to be sharing. I didn't know Gianna was doing the other share, and I feel so lucky to have heard to, and you know, she's one of my best friends, and one of the people who I talk to on a regular basis to right size and work out where I'm at in my recovery. So that really just put me at ease a little bit before starting. So thanks, T. I mean, usually I'd kind of talk a little bit about what I've been up to during the day and you know, what today of recovery's kind of brought. But I imagine it's pretty much the same for a lot of us, right? I got up, I sat on the couch, I went for my state-mandated exercise, and then had a little, well, actually rattled a sleeve of biscuits because I had a bit of a feeling, and then sat down for the meeting. And, you know, I think it's, I'm such a creature of routine as well, that it took me a little while after we started to lock down to kind of work out what my routine looked like, how I was gonna kind of survive and get through. And you know, it's been one of those things. Now me and my wife have now been locked down for, this is the end of like 4.5 weeks. She's pregnant, so we kind of started distancing early. And you know, it's meant that by now, like, I think a couple of weeks ago we hit a routine, we kind of had it all cracked. Then last week it was like completely bored of that and just really, how much longer is this going to go on? At the same time, we're trying to buy a house, and that had gone on hold because of the whole situation. The people didn't want to sell, didn't want to move out because they didn't know where they were going to at the time. And you know, last week was this real feeling of like, I could tell that I was in defect, right? I could tell because I was trying to control everything. I was talking to the wife saying, you've got to call the estate agent, and I'll call the solicitors, and we'll do this, and we'll make something happen. And then actually, kind of speaking of my sponsor towards the tail end of last week and start of this week, this is the best kind of step three. Like, it's out of my hands. Step one, turn it like out of my hands. Step three, turn it over. Like, I just wait. And so Monday, speaking to my sponsor, kind of said, you know, it's out of my hands. There's nothing I can do. Tuesday, we get a call from the people who were buying the house off saying they're ready. They want to start moving forward and they're going to exchange next week. So, you know, all of a sudden, that kind of little lesson of when I stop trying to control stuff, the universe takes its right little courses. It's kind of glaring loudly at me at the moment. And, you know, it wasn't like that for most of my recovery and the rest of my life, right? But, you know, I came from a reasonably normal place, I think. I came from a, you know, 3 kids, middle class, private school in West London, kind of family. Parents got divorced like when I was a teenager, and you know, that's not uncommon. There was nothing in my kind of upbringing that made me special or different. I just always felt outside, and I felt outside. I didn't feel connected in the way that I saw some people with my family. I didn't feel it with the school. I didn't feel it with like the people who were my friends, right? I would sit with them and then I'd leave, and I would imagine that they were all just still there having a great time, a better time without me. And I couldn't imagine that I was having any sort of positive impact on anyone. And I found, for the most part, just so much of my life complete torture of just, I just so uncomfortable in my own skin and just trying to be. And so when someone introduced me to, well, at first alcohol and then other drugs, it was this feeling of like, and I know it's this cliche now, right? Of like, I've arrived, like this is it. This I've got the answer, I've got the secret that everyone else should be doing this. Why isn't anyone else doing this the way that I'm doing this? And the people around me, you know, would look on and kind of and talk to me and go, like, the way the, you know, at 14, 15, I was drinking wasn't normal. And, you know, people noticed that. I didn't notice that. They said it and it kind of went in one side, out the other, and disappeared, and I kind of lost it again, right? And I progressively got more and more lonely. And you know, I kind of did reasonably well at school, went off to a decent university, like used and drank so much that I out of, you know, a full course of doing stuff, supposed to be doing stuff every week, I think I went to one lecture in the year, and then was surprised when I didn't pass my year and they kicked me out, right? And finished from there, and I got a job. Did quite well at the job. The only trouble I had was that I would turn up pretty much every day, completely in bits. And the only saving grace of that was they kind of let me work whatever hours I wanted. So they were really flexible with me, like coming in a little bit later one day, and then like the next day I'd be coming straight. I'd start at 6 in the morning, so I'd be coming straight in off the night out. And you know, I found I didn't have a lot of consequences that hurt me. In a way that kind of meant anything. I always had this thing of like, oh, it's okay, that's just, yeah, it's a small setback, it's only a small thing, it's only this, is that. And you know, as I used more and as I took kind of had more and more consequences as I went through, I had this feeling that, you know, no matter how bad it was kind of getting, it was fine. I was still gonna be all right. And that really kind of lasted until like the last 2 or 3 years of my using, of everything's going to be fine. Like, I wake up, like, by next week, we'll have sorted it. Like, completely, don't worry, I'll just get another job, I'll find some money. And I could always find money, and I could always kind of I could always just scotch tape my life back together enough that it looked like a life to people on the outside, right? It was this thing of that if you don't look too closely at the vase, you won't see the cracks. So you stay back over there, and you won't notice exactly what's going on in here. You won't see it. And you know, towards kind of the last, you know, and up until this point as well, right? There was still more fun than there was consequences. And it's only when that balance shifted that I even started to think about stopping, right? And I would sit up and I would sit up night after night with people using and going, you know what? I'm going to calm this down, I'd say. And they go, yeah, me too, me too. And we'd all be sat there the next day going, you know what, tomorrow we'll stop. And these were people that, you know, people who I would have considered friends, but actually the people who, since I got clean, I haven't seen and I haven't spoken to. The ones that, you know, I would have said, like, they're my best mates and we got this whole thing in common. You know, the whole life we're living is this kind of, it's symbiotic, right? Of like where everything that we're doing, it's always together and we're a unit. And as soon as I stop using, gone, lost them completely. And you know, they're a lot of them have now kind of gotten clean and kind of done their own thing. And you know, but none of us have gotten back together and gone, you know what was really good is when we were all together hanging out. People have got their own lives, they've got their own stuff going on. I think it's this wonderful thing of knowing that they're well now. Gives me an enormous sense of peace versus the time that we like, it's more peaceful for me to be away from them knowing that they're well or knowing that kind of it they haven't got they're not around this, right? And so at like 25, I was having more and more serious conversations with people around, like, I'm gonna get clear, I've gotta stop doing this, I can't keep doing this. And I distanced. Well, socially distanced just about everyone, right? To the point of I had a couple of mates still around who, and you know, I'd see them infrequently, and when I did, I'd put on the best face, and we'd be able to just, I think they'd just about put up with me for the duration of seeing me, and then I'd go back, and then, you know, we'd be meeting for a drink of an evening, and then we'd leave each other at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, and then I'd carry on, but they wouldn't know, so they still saw the best view. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine, my best friend, best man at my wedding, in April or early May 2016, was just saying to him, you know, I can't carry on. And you know, I'd never really spoken to any of my friends that deeply about my mental health or anything that was going on, or about, or too much about the addiction. And he just went, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "I think I'm going to go to, like, I think the actual words I said was, I think I'm going to go to one of these meetings." And I'd had the rest of the conversation in my head, and he went, "What meetings? What are you talking about?" And I went, "You know, NA." And he went, "No, what's that?" And I went, "I don't know, but I think it's going to help." And he went, "Okay." He went, "What's it about?" I went, "Well, I think they'll, you know, I'll be able to stop taking drugs." And he went, "Well, that sounds good then. Like, do you want me to come with you?" And you know, I went, I tell the story a lot, right? I sat there like 3 in the morning, smashing, just went, "No, I can handle it. I'm an adult, right? I can manage going to a meeting on my own." And you know, I spoke to him a couple of times during that, and he said, "When do you think you're going to go?" And that was like Saturday night, and so I thought, immediately having said it, regretted having said it, because it meant that I was going to be accountable for doing something, right? And so what I did is I pushed it as far as I thought I could, and so I pushed it to the when to the Friday of the following week, and I said, I'll go to a meeting on Friday." And he went, "Okay, sure you don't want me to come with you?" And I went, "No, it's absolutely fine." And what we did then, he spoke to me a couple of times in the week just to check in, see how I was. And you know, I was drinking during the week, but I kind of had this, I had a little sense of hope, like something was going to change. I didn't know what, like, I didn't know what was going to happen when I got to the meet. I didn't know anything that was going to happen, but I had a little sense of hope, like the feeling that I'd had for the last couple of years, which, and you know, that feeling is self-esteem so low that I didn't want to kill myself because I was living in a shared flat and I didn't want to inconvenience the people I lived with, right? That I came from that place. And he said, he called me and kind of kept in touch. And he spoke to me the day before and he said, "Are you still going to that meeting tomorrow?" And I said, "Yes, but I need somebody to come with me." And I, in that reaching out for help, he, you know, he's not an addict. He's never been to a meeting. He doesn't know what it's about. Not his bag at all. But he came with me, stood outside this meeting, and we looked at it. Look, stood outside, and it's a meeting Friday night in the city. It's St. Catherine's Creed Church, just off Leadenhall Street. And it's a beautiful candlelit meditation meeting, right? Which is wonderful if you know what the fuck's going on in an NA meeting. Got in there, and you know, it took an hour of standing outside, kind of opposite and around the corner, to work up the courage to go in. And got in, and people, the first thing that anyone said to me was like, "Is this your first meeting?" I don't know, could obviously tell, right? And I just said yes, and he said, "Then your life must be shit. Welcome." And they, you know, it used to be a smaller meeting. It was all around one table, candles down the middle, lights off, and I was just paralyzed with fear for an hour and a half. But I was lucky. The guy who shared told a very similar story of, you know, similar background, similar work, similar drugs, similar age, like. And I got so lucky that I could just hear similarities. And that might have been desperation, but it might have just been the right person in the right place at the right time, guided by something outside of myself, right? And you know, this meeting was nowhere near where I live, nowhere near where I was doing anything. It was just one that I picked at random. It was far enough away that I wouldn't be seen, and I could be anonymous. And you know, I at that meeting, somebody said, "Come to another meeting." And I did. And you know, because that was the first time for a long time that somebody had said in earnest, come and be part of something. And I that little feeling of being what that little grain of hope started to grow, right? And I did, and I went to that next meeting. And at that meeting, I met the person who ended up being my first sponsor. And that chap said to me, meet me at another meeting. And then I met somebody else at that meeting, and they said, oh, have you been to this meeting? And I hadn't, and I went. And I got into this pattern of doing meetings regularly. And I didn't do 90 and 90. I had a huge case of the self-importance, where I was too busy. Like it talks about in the Just for Today for Today, right? It talks about it in Just for Today for Today, too busy to recover. I think the last line of it is, I will do something today that will sustain my recovery. And what I was doing on a regular basis was enough to sustain my recovery. And I did that for the first year. I did work recovery and nothing else. And all I did was just, I got my foundation and I worked through a set of steps, and I'd made amends, and I got social acceptability back really quickly, but that wasn't recovery. And I still had that little hole. I'd worked through a set of steps and I still had a hole that said, you know, there's more. I was surviving, and I was, you know, my recovery was being sustained, but I wasn't living. I wasn't loving life. And actually I left that sponsor. I started working with somebody different, and I built more of a network inside the rooms, where in the first year of recovery, I would talk to this friend who came to his first meeting with me, and I would talk to other people. Like, I vividly remember, just over a year clean, kind of stood outside a meeting with Des, with Tiana, and moving from this self-deprecation, which was kind of the deflective humor, to honesty, and not going like, oh yeah, life shit, just so that people would kind of have something and, you know, I could connect a little bit, but giving them a piece and saying, you know, this is where I'm at. And upon starting to do that, my life changed, and I worked through another set of steps with that sponsor. He stopped doing recovery. I continued to take service. I continued to kind of regularly write step work and commit stuff to paper. And my routine actually now daily, well, until kind of this lockdown happened, was get up, go to work. At the end of the working day, get back in the car, on the phone, every day on the phone, speak to an addict. And my regular inventory was with a variety of different people. And that's not me, that wasn't me dropping little seeds with one person that I didn't want to tell somebody else. It was, there's five or six people who every day, one of them I would inventory with and kind of go, what's going on for you? Here's what's going on for me. And what it meant is that I don't bring the stress and the working day, I don't bring that home with me. And so that little disconnect there gives me, lets me be the best version of myself with my wife. And I think that's something that has really, again, changed. And that didn't happen in the first couple of years. It was something that kind of came over a period of time. Where I've gotten to now with kind of trying to create new patterns is, you know, I've been getting up, starting work at kind of 8 o'clock. I take a break at 12. I go for a half an hour walk and I pick up the phone. And I speak to somebody for kind of 25 minutes, half an hour every day, and then go back to work for the afternoon, finish work at like 5 o'clock, 5:30. And again, this is all at home, remoting, but go out for a run or a jump on the turbo trainer and cycle indoors and do like an hour's worth of exercise and then pick up the phone. And I'm having to work harder to sustain my recovery today than I did 3 months ago. And a lot of what's going on, the impetus is on me, right? It's very easy to sit for me and kind of go, you know, the universe has conspired and it's really difficult for me, poor me, that I can't go to meeting. Like the rest of you, bollocks you, right? This is about me. And the whole thing has really kind of made me take accountability for my recovery in a way that I didn't have to for a while before. It has been beautiful. And, it, you know, one of the things that I'm stressed about now is actually in 3 weeks' time, I'll have finished the last service commitment that I had, because all of my service comes to an end in April, because I got clean at the start of May. So all of my service is coming to an end and I'm going to have to create new patterns. And I had this stress today of going, oh my God, what am I going to do? Recovery is going to fall apart without me. The meetings are going to stop. The whole thing's just going to die. And it's, again, just to hear people and be in a meeting and just feel a bit of recovery can grab me. Just go, you know what? I am not the most important person in the room. It is important that I keep turning up for me. And because if people didn't have that attitude, then nothing would keep running. But the important thing is that everyone just sticks. And especially at a time now where we can't be quite as close. I saw a thing, I can't even remember where I saw it on, I think it was on the telly yesterday, and I can't remember where. And it was just a little line, and it said that the feelings are like waves. We can't choose which ones come, but we can choose which ones we want to surf. And with that, I'll leave it there. Thanks.